Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila. Handcrafted, expert approved, with over 20 international blind tasting awards. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York, 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Southern Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
That's our team.
We gotta get paid.
Yeah, we
gotta get paid.
We gotta get paid, man. So big news in the drinks world over the weekend. If you want to tell us about it, Souther.
I mean, yeah, sure. The Bud Light Lime-A-Rita apparently does not contain hard alcohol. I don't think any of us thought it did. But I think that the public did because it wasn't clear enough on the labels that it didn't contain hard alcohol, that it was just a malt beverage. I'm curious if this will bleed over and we'll see, Truly or those guys get, the long and short of it is a civil lawsuit has been filed and won. Anyone who has had, a Bud Light Lime-A-Rita is entitled to a check from Anheuser-Busch for up to $20-something if you have proof of purchase. If you have no proof of purchase, you can still fill out a form and get a check for a little over $9. Frankly, I'm going to consider it a buyback from Anheuser-Busch. I'm getting that check. What do you think, guys?
I think you said in the text thread, you said that you were going to frame it and put it in a Margo, right?
Or yeah, something like that.
I think it'd be like a really good home bar type,
memorabilia. Like just,
yeah, totally. This like this moment
that time
in history.
Back in 2022 when I got a check from Anheuser-Busch.
I just want to think about like I can't help but think about like all the kind of like placebo effects that happen when partying that were unjustified, you know, like it's like,
sure. How many margaritas have you had? Oh man, you must be wasted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Three.
Like, I'm so wasted. It's like, it doesn't have any alcohol in it.
Oh, I mean, God. To be sure, I really consider this to be a frivolous lawsuit. Like, no one in their sort of adult right mind should have thought for one second that a thing that says Bud Light Lime-A-Rita has any tequila in it, right? But the claims that they made were that they wouldn't have paid as much, which shocks me, right? They think that it's overpriced if it doesn't have tequila in it.
Yeah, I mean, I've lost a lot of faith and trust in humanity over, you know, all these years of living, but this one's just pretty. This is like some like Darwin Award level, you know, behavior.
Oh, sure. Like the Tide Pods or the more recent one, the Sleepy Chicken. Have you heard about this?
No. What is this crazy, scary new thing the kids are doing to frighten us, Souther? What is the Sleepy Chicken? It sounds dirty.
The kids on TikTok are cooking chicken breasts in NyQuil.
Oh, what? God.
I love the pregnant pause there. No, they're cooking chicken in NyQuil. It comes out deeply, disturbingly purple, green. I don't know. I'm colorblind. But no one that's making these videos is actually eating the stuff. But people then are going and making it on their own and eating the stuff. And the FDA has had to step forward and say something about it, just like they did with the Tide Pods.
Isn't Sleepy Chicken just a turkey? And, I don't know. I'm old school, man. Yeah.
On that note, Damon wins the day. we've gone through the Bud Light Lime-A-Rita controversy, and we somehow jumped ship into Sleepy Chicken. But honestly, Greg, I feel like we should get the show on the road.
Yes. Stay tuned for the public service announcement from NyQuil to not do this.
Anything to get us to stop talking about this bullshit is totally welcome.
Yeah. But in the meantime. Joining us in the studio today, we have, really excited about this one, the co-author of Black Mixolence, a comprehensive guide to black mixology, Tamika Hall. Tamika, how you doing?
Hey guys, how are you? I'm well. Listening to this Lima Rita story and thinking about all the people who drank like six and were stumbling all over it. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, get your check. We deserve recompense.
Yes, all of us. It's open to anyone without proof of purchase, which is my favorite part. I've certainly never had one of these, nor have I ever bought one, so I don't have proof of purchase, but I'm getting that check.
It's also like you save the receipts, like you're going to, like, what expense account are you, like, what do you have to where you're saving Bud Light?
Yeah, listen to your CPA, guys. Save your Lima Rita receipts.
Yeah, this just goes to show. You could have made $22.37.
Yeah, I think I would be embarrassed to hold on to receipts like that.
Anyhow.
Yeah, Tamika, so you just had an event right here in New York City. When did the book actually drop? I know that on Monday night you were at Porch Light with our last week's guest, which was Samantha Reiner, who's the GM over there. I'm sure you got to hang out with her on Monday. When did the book drop?
So the book finally dropped on July 26th. It had two date changes, which were super harrowing because we were trying to plan events and do things around that, and then it kept getting moved and changed. Long story short, it dropped at the most perfect time. It was the Tuesday at Tales. So I was actually in New Orleans for Pub Day at my first Tales of the Cocktail. And needless to say, it was a memory. Well, or lack thereof. But it was a really great way to bring in this type of book and be around mixologists and people who really understand the industry and could really appreciate the book.
Now, you say it was your first Tales of the Cocktail. Tell us a little bit about your history so we can understand that. That sounds to me like you're not necessarily in the cocktail world until now.
So early on, I did some freelance writing first, and I worked for bigger brands. I wrote spirit content. I wrote branded spirit content. I did a few like drink reviews and that type of stuff. And then I rolled into corporate marketing, which is a little different than freelance because you kind of have to do what the big brands tell you. So, I kind of ventured into it that way. I did restaurant reviews, food reviews, drink reviews, favorite spirits. I went to events. I covered events. One most memorably was an Acuto launch that happened in Miami through Budweiser, like in 2014, where they had this big giant 3-day thing where they had a tequila-infused beer. I don't know if you remember that.
How timely to give an art company.
But yeah, it was that. And it was, you know, so I've done a lot of stuff like that. More closely, I've created online content for hospitality course with NYU and my old company. But I've always kind of had my hands in writing about food and drink related items, just not specifically cocktails. So we decided to do the book. It was really based on cocktails, and then we kind of sprawled into history, and here you have Black Mixolence.
Yeah, talk about the book a little bit, like sort of break it down for me, like what you just said, really, like what percentage of it is just sheerly cocktail, and what percentage is history, and how did you go about sort of digging up that information and compiling it into this book?
So we have 20 featured mixologists that each contributed 1 to 3 recipes, and then Colin contributed his talented cocktails and recipes to fill in the rest. And then I decided that it would be good to give it some historical content just to give it some content. So I touched on things like Birdie Brown, Uncle Nearest, which people already were hearing about. It was really just a testament to what people were hearing. Some of the first Black mixologists in the industry, and most importantly, how Black mixologists were already performing a service industry. Like, we were mandated doing this service years and years and years ago, and it wasn't called mixology, but a lot of us used it to create a lifestyle, to buy our freedom, and we're still making strides in the industry today. So just trying to shed light on that. So it's a little ode to history and a nod to the present and trailblazers that are coming up in the industry now.
That's super interesting that you mentioned that the fact that it wasn't called mixology, because I've always sort of had a really fraught relationship with that word, because to me, I don't know, there's something that's kind of icky and classist about it, right? Like, you know, it's like, oh, no, I'm not a bartender. I'm a mixologist. And it puts you in this sort of like rarefied company that a lot of people, a lot of, you know, not white, not male people don't have a much harder time, you know, getting acceptance in that field and getting, you know, the accolades of like, oh yes, this person is doing a serious craft. So was that sort of on your mind? I mean, the word mixology is in the title. Is that, was that something that was sort of on your mind as you were working on this book?
So the funny thing is, as I interviewed some of the featured mixologists, a lot of them wanted to be called bartenders, others preferred mixologists. And so it was interesting to see the commentary around why I prefer mixologist or why I prefer bartender. Bartender to a lot of people held a more traditional, I guess, feel to the job. So it meant that they were really knowledgeable in their mixes and spirits and they knew their information, versus mixologists were kind of deemed as like the kind of bartenders that blow bubbles in cocktails and don't really know how to mix drinks and everything is weird colors with glitter and flowered ice cubes kind of thing. So people didn't want to be associated with that. But I see how the two, it really is, I guess, how you see yourself in the industry. And so, yeah, it was interesting that the two names, and I'd be like, so you're a mixologist? No, I'm a bartender. I'd be like, okay. So I'd be like, so you're a bartender? No, I'm a mixologist. And I was like, right. Okay. So I would just open and say, what is your preference? Like, do you call yourself a mixologist or a bartender? And let them kind of lead that conversation. And then I can hear why. And then that gives deeper insight into how they too view themselves in the industry.
Souther, Greg, what do you call yourself?
I mean, that's exactly how I got my moniker. I was interviewed, it feels like a million years ago, by Metro Mix, which was an online magazine that doesn't exist anymore. And they said, so you're the head, the opening of the interview was, you're the head mixologist at Rye Restaurant? And I said, no, I'm the CD, creative drunk. And then that's how I created my moniker. You know, I drink a lot and I like to create things. And so I just crammed those two things together. But I certainly feel that I fall into the bartender category. I tend the bar. I serve people, not drinks. You know, I'm here for the people. If it weren't for the people being here, there's nothing for me to do.
Yeah. And I think it's like also, that. Yeah, now I call myself a day walker. Like, I think it would be disingenuous of me to say that I'm still a bartender. Cause I, you know, I'm still taking those 2 weeks off in March of 2020 to flatten the curve. But I only ever referred to myself as a mixologist one time. And it was when I was in the emergency room after falling off my bike and breaking my wrist. And they give you that little box on the intake form for occupation. And I'm like, I need one short, snappy word to let these people know how important it is that I get my hand back as fast and as functionally as possible. So I wrote down mixologist. And right on cue, the person doing the intake, when she took my form, was like, oh, you're a mixologist. Cool. And then she looked at me and just went, ooh.
Yeah. But, a lot of PT there.
But you know, I don't, as I just said, I don't really like the sort of, the way that calling yourself a mixologist can kind of put you up on a pedestal. And I never liked it, but now that I've done some more research and talked to Nicola Nice, who's been on the show a couple of times, who's incredible, and learned about how constantly throughout history, things that were manual labor and were unglamorous work, as soon as they became cool, they would be given a different name and taken over by white dudes who suddenly got all of the, you know, the applause and the praise and the accolades for it. And, you know, it's like, oh, no, it's not being a midwife, it's being a doula or whatever. Please excuse me if anyone listening to this is a midwife / doula. I'm not really sure where the differentiation there is, but you sort of get my point. It's the same as being a bartender versus being a mixologist. So that's kind of where I come
on. Sure, sure. Or the dishwasher versus the underwater ceramics technician.
Right.
which exists, that's out there. Damon, where do you fall on this? Which side of the fence do you fall?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, as far as, like, I don't tend bar anymore. I still own a bar, but and I work in the spirits industry, and I teach about cocktails, but I still say I'm just a bar person. I don't tend bar. I'm a barman or a bartender or whatever you want to call it. You know, like I don't know. I kind of like I lean towards yours, like your side of it, where it's like, you know, I serve people, I don't serve drinks. It's like I would say that a bar is only as good as the people who are in it. And so, you know, that's kind of where I land with that It sounds really pretentious when you say mixologist. I mean, but I think it's also a generational thing too.
I do too.
And,
yeah,
and I'm older than everyone here, so
except me.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to Tamika and the book. Tamika, can you give us a couple of, I don't want you to give the whole book away because we need people to go out there and buy it, but can you give us some examples of the figures that you got to like sort of shine a light on, both past and present? I understand that the recipes in the book were contributed by people who are alive, mm-hmm. But there's plenty of history in there, some people that are past. So can you talk about like what made you choose the ones that you chose and from both aspects, both the past and current day?
So I am digging and trying to find mixologists of present day. It was sort of like I went to a Black restaurant week. They were doing like a Maker's Mark competition, and that was the first time I'd ever seen so many Black mixologists in a competition. Normally, when I had done other work, it was
where was it?
So it was virtual because I want to say okay. It was during the pandemic. So a lot sure. of it was like on their Instagram feed, but it was just so many pictures of different mixologists. So now I start doing some digging, getting some homework. We did have a PR list and some people, like a list from PR of things we could contact, but I kind of went with some of the mixologists that were actually doing things. So for example, Tiffany Barrier is featured in the book, Vance Henderson, Glendon Hartley, Camille Wilson, who's the cocktail snob. It's a lot of people who right now are kind of moving and shaking in the industry. And then, of course, Colin, who has his footprint solidly planted in the industry right now, doing a lot of different things, has been doing a lot of different things. And he really brought his cocktail expertise to the book because I only drink the cocktails. I don't mix them. But now that I have the book, I can mix them, FYI.
Cool.
That's good. That's good, but it's not the fun part. The fun part's just the drinking.
Right. Like when I said I was always on the other side of the bar, I had no idea that bartenders, mixologists had so many stories and so many ways as to how they navigated through the industry. It was really intriguing to me. Like, legit.
Well, you have to understand that generally, and I'm going to emphasize the word generally, when tending the bar, we're facing a room full of people who we are actively inebriating, and yet we are not inebriated. So we are the storytellers and the history keepers because we're the ones who are looking at the whole room through a sober eye.
You're absolutely right. I can see where I've been on that side of history many times.
Speak for yourself, Teague. I'm always wasted behind the bar.
I said generally.
Emphasis on gen.
But then generally. going back into history, there's Birdie Brown, who was a Black woman who was making moonshine. There's Tom Bullock. There's quite a few people that people are kind of talking about, not talking about enough, and maybe just need to know a little more. And while we didn't include all of history, it's really just a little kind of tip of the iceberg, and it encourages people to just learn more on their own.
Yeah, I'd love to talk a little bit about, because you know I'm a history geek and I love this stuff, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about what it was like sort of tracking these people down. You know, I mean, was it sort of this you know, because generally history is written by white guys and features a lot of white guys, so it's very, very hard to sort of find the stories and the legends about these people, or was it like they were just lying there, you know, waiting for someone to come along and write this book that they just sort of been, we had the stories and it had sort of been glossed over a little bit.
Well, you had to do digging because the first thing I noticed is that there were a lot of similar stories, but the narrative was different, if that makes sense. So it was really tracking down the most consistent version of the story and then fact checking it before that. So there was a lot of that happening. There was also not enough information. And a lot of that comes from us not being able to read or write or document actual things. So just trying to get the most accurate version of the story and then fact checking it to make sure that's the most accurate version of the story and going with that.
It seems to be the general way we, like, you know, like for, I feel like for a long time, a lot of people didn't realize that Tom Bullock was person of color when the book came out, you know, it like, but I feel like these days we have so much great, I mean, it's a lot of internet work, but you know, it's like we're able to dig back through history. It's like we keep finding older and older history of cocktail and spirits information, and it's just kind of crazy. Like almost every year, it's like, oh wait, I thought the cocktail was invented in 1806. Now it's 1795. Now wait, what? Yeah. There's an earlier, you know. So it's like, and that's exactly the same here. And I love the fact that, as you mentioned, like I teach a lot of classes on cocktail history, and mainly these days on the subject of brandy. And the thing is, it keeps going further back, but then at the same time, it's moving forward. So I love that you've featured a lot of this history, but as you'd mentioned, like people like Camille and Vance and Miss Frankie, who are featured in this book, you know, it's like not just looking at the past, but like taking it into the future and kind of shining a light on all of it together. It's really cool.
Right.
I've got a digital copy a few months ago, and I've been like scrolling through it, and it's a great book. I mean, God, there's so much information in here that just hasn't come to light ever in another cocktail book or book on the subject of alcohol in general.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think my favorite was actually tracking rum.
Yeah.
And seeing the history of rum, where it came from, the fact that slaves were probably harvesting a lot of the products, or even refining the process to how rum was even made. So that was all just super intriguing to me, and how our involvement in a lot of these things, you would never hear, like I never heard of it, any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at that page right now, The Dark and Stormy History of Caribbean Rum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, yeah.
And I think for a lot of us who grew up in Caribbean and Latino homes, like rum is a staple. So knowing where it came from, how it came to be so important, is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, this is cool. I mean, like, guys, did you get a copy of this book yet?
I did not, unless it's in my email somewhere that I haven't seen.
I had intended to
go on Monday and pick up a copy and see your face.
Porch light.
But I couldn't make it. Had to deal with the stupid flooding in my living room.
If you guys can get me a shipping address, I'll make sure that you all have physical copies of the book.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, cool.
but let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come right back and keep talking to Tamika about Black Mixolence. Stay with us.
Tequila creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. 818 is created from fully matured blue agave from the Los Altos and Valles regions of tequila. It is then slow cooked for over 30 hours, extracted using traditional Tahona wheels, distilled twice in copper pot stills, and aged in American and French oak barrels. Their tequilas have received over 25 blind tasting awards. They strive for excellence in every sip. 818's Blanco is sweet and smooth, with undertones of tropical and citrus fruits. Their Reposado is soft and balanced, with notes of caramel and vanilla. And their Añejo is elegant and velvety, with crisp herbal notes and a warm vanilla finish. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their tequila and find it near you. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
And we are back. You are listening to The Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking with Tamika Hall, who is the co-author of Black Mixolence. And we were talking a little bit about kind of the research process and the history in general, Tamika, that you were going through to write this book beforehand. But I'm super curious because, I haven't gotten my copy yet, and I'm, you know, really excited about it. Are there any stories that you found as you were researching this, either from the past or from the present day, that you were like, oh man, like this is really amazing, I didn't know this, and we're just totally blown away by?
So I think for me, the story that kind of had me like, oh shit, the most was the story of Birdie Brown and how she used to make moonshine during Prohibition, and how she had her bed and breakfast, and people were coming from all over the country to A, get some illegal alcohol, but B, also just partake in her bed and breakfast homestead. So in true Black woman fashion, she was multitasking, doing a lot of things, and that's kind of how she died. I don't want to say how it happened, but she died multitasking, trying to do many different things, including make her final batch of moonshine.
I think I might see where this story is going. Right. I have a feeling. I mean, that's a heck of a story, and I'm excited to read about it.
Right, but a woman who has established a business that people are traveling to and is doing this illicit thing to, you know, kind of move the needle forward in the spirits world. That's a pretty incredible story just right there on its face.
Right. And it's like you have to think a lot of the people who were involved in spirits or anything were men, mostly men. Mm-hmm. So to have a woman that was doing such a thing and people were actually traveling to see her and get her product, I think that's pretty badass. So
where geographically was her bed and breakfast?
I want to say Montana. She had a homestead in Montana. I think it's specifically Fergus County.
I mean, even that part seems, I would not have guessed just based on all that. I was thinking like, you know, somewhere in Appalachia or what have you. Yeah. So out in Montana during Prohibition, a woman of color, like two hurdles to overcome, mm-hmm. has a business that encourages people to travel all the way to see her. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I don't know if you know, there is a brand, Birdie Brown Plain Hooch, that is sold now. And the story is that it's created based off of what her recipe was. Not sure if that's all the way true, but that's the story of the brand.
Wow, never even heard of it. I'll definitely have to look it up and look into it myself. So I love that, right? I love when I'm reading a book and then I'm compelled to go and take an action in, you know, outside the covers of the book. So I'll check it out.
Ha, black mixolence at work. See, that's how it's supposed to work. And that's exactly...
black mixolence at work.
That's exactly the vibe that I want people to get. Like, read the story. Maybe you didn't know something, but now it's going to prompt you to take a next step and either look for the brand or try to make the cocktail or dig more into the story. Or all those are CTAs that unknown or unsaid CTAs that was really a focus when writing the book.
Yeah, outstanding. So that's a great example of someone from history. Do you have an example you'd like to share with us, with someone who's maybe still alive and kicking and in the book that you featured and shine some light on to bring that person up?
I mean, we should talk about Colin because he couldn't make the show today, you know? Like,
well, he couldn't make it, so he's out of the conversation.
to me, Colin's like, yeah, he didn't get involved.
Y'all gonna get me in trouble.
No, I mean, like, to me, like, Colin is the first he was the first brand ambassador I ever met. Just like, not doesn't matter color specific or gender. He was the very first brand ambassador I ever met when he was working with a luxury vodka brand back in the day, and he was really like boots on the ground, like moving the needle on that. And then he ended up with Cardi and like just kind of blew up from there, you know. But like, he was so inspirational to me, and he's the reason why I became a brand ambassador, because I was just like, this is like the coolest dude I've ever met in my life, and he's got the coolest job and he loves what he does. Like, I was like, I want to do that. But also, right, just as a mixologist, like a modern mixologist, this dude has like, he's gotten like so many of the names that I wanted to use for cocktails, this guy's already he got there before me. Like, I know that in like the intro or the foreword, I think, of the book, it talks about the first notice of alcohol was communion wine, right? And then that's exactly the same for me. But there's a cocktail called King James, like as in the King James version of the Bible. So I was just like, God, I always thought that'd be such a cool name for a cocktail. But then also there's another cocktail called the Autobahn. Great name for a cocktail. But mm-hmm. then probably one of the coolest names for a cocktail is the Kaleidoscope. And it's also, I don't know if either of you have had this cocktail, but it's basically like an avocado laced blended pina colada, which is, it's just brilliant. And, yeah, and it has a cool name, the Kaleidoscope. Yeah. And so, like, you know, it's just like these kinds of things. I'm just like kind of mad at him, but like, I'm happy that it was him, you know, that like,
Plus he's super charming and charismatic, and
I don't know. I mean, I'm mad in a loving way. I'm obviously not actually mad at him, but there's also like other. I mean, to me, he's one of the like premier mixologists of our time. He just has been, you know. But there's like we mentioned before, there's so many other great drinks and great mixologists and bartenders mentioned in this book. I mean, there's there was one cocktail that. Trying to remember which one it was. I don't want to waste our time me trying to remember, but I was just like this. No, it was the buzzword. I can't remember who.
So we served the buzzword at Porch Light Bar the other day. Oh, and cool. Buzzword was contributed by Vance Henderson.
Yeah.
Love Vance. Great guy.
Vance is the best.
Uh-huh.
And that, to me, that's like, it's in the name. It should be like one of those viral cocktails, like a paper plane or a penicillin or Oaxacan Old Fashioned, you know? It's like, it's just set up to be buzzworthy, you know? Like, I think so, anyway.
So it's actually a marriage between two cocktails, but I don't want to tell that part of the story yet. But yeah, buzzword is marriage between bee's knees and last word. So if they had a baby, it would be a buzzword.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I just got that. Oh, man.
Damn it.
That's pretty great. Portmanteau. That's pretty great. Well, since we are talking about Colin a little bit in his absence, we can probably poke fun at him if we want. How did the two of you connect and get this project off the ground?
So I came with the content part, but I needed a co-author who knew about recipes because this is a mimosa. I'm just going to pour champagne with a dab of orange juice. That's how I make a cocktail. I don't know anything about proportion or ingredients or how much. I do know about brands and spirits and flavors, but for me to even look at a recipe and know if it's correct or if this is good or whatever, I have no idea. So Colin's expertise was super important to this book because he really refined and perfected all of the cocktails that were submitted and the ones that he gave, they're really a testament to his talent. So if it wasn't for him, the cocktails would definitely be trash.
So he was your technical advisor, basically.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And he was able to tell from a like real world perspective the movement of the mixology industry, how the industry has changed because he's been in it for so long. So he was able to provide that aspect as well from a real life POV.
Yeah, I often talk about how maybe not my favorite or best drink experience ever, but my best drinking experience ever was with Colin. We went to Duke's and had a martini together, and it was, I think of it all the time, what a great time I had just hanging out with him and having Palazzi make us a Duke's martini. It was incredible. He's such a charming and affecting character to be around. So
yes, he definitely brings the energy into the room at all. It doesn't matter what the room is like before he came in. He's definitely going to brighten it, and it's going to leave. When he leaves, the energy remains.
Yeah, 100%. For sure. I'm sure he imbued some of that energy into the book. And again, I can't wait to get a copy and drill through it. I'll dig through my emails and see if I got a digital copy in there somewhere that I didn't realize that I had. But I'm very excited to read the book. Sorry I couldn't see you on Monday night. But we're wishing you all the success with this book. Any upcoming dates that you have that you want to maybe promote that you're going to be promoting the book?
I know we have some things coming down the pike, but I don't want to speak in them yet because they're not confirmed. So once they are confirmed and set in stone, I will definitely shoot you guys an email and you can share maybe at a later time, later show.
Sure.
But we would definitely love to have you. We'll make sure that you get the invites too, since we missed you at Porch Light, so we can hang out, have a drink, get involved, all the things.
Get involved. Love it. And we will put in the show notes links to purchase the book. And we hope the sales go through the roof, and then hopefully there can be a follow up book.
Yes, hopefully a part two to all of this.
I mean, that's always the goal, especially with a book about history. There's more. There's always more history.
Of course.
Keep going back. You know.
Yep.
Well, this has been awesome. I know that you're pressed for time, and we just want to thank you for taking the time out today to be with us here on the show and talk about the book. And it's an awesome book. I've been able to flip through it a little bit, and it's great to see the history, but it's also great to see so many friends with their recipes here in the book. And it's just like, I just makes me makes me miss everybody. And like, aww. Yeah. And yeah, so I can't wait to see you and Colin and the rest of everyone else who's in this book, and hopefully have a drink with them. Have the buzzword. I mean, damn it, that's so good.
come on, Vance.
I love punny names, and Jesus,
yeah, I was, that's your favorite. Right? Isn't that super cool?
Yeah, that's so perfect. And last time I saw Vance was like at Camp Runamuck maybe 4 years ago. So we're way overdue. But yeah, I feel like I'm overdue for a drink with everyone.
I have to remember that. My goal is to have like a Black Mixolins meetup where the mixologists are there. Their drinks are featured. The bar has all the ingredients to make all of their drinks. And we can just kind of go with it. Because some of them I haven't even met in person. I met a few at Tails, a few in New York. But I haven't met everyone in person yet because we did this during the pandemic. So...
yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. But, well, I mean, it's cool that this is all documented, at least, you know, like, so then you have a real extra reason to meet up with them and have a drink with them. Well, cool. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. I want to thank you again, Tamika, and sorry, Colin, that you weren't on the show, but we'll catch up soon. And everyone check out Black Mixolins. It's an awesome book. And it's out on, what is it, Kingston Imperial? Is the...
yes, Kingston Imperial is the publisher, yeah. Distributed by Penguin Random House.
Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show. Everyone, it's great talking with you. And get those checks from Budweiser Limerita. Make sure you get those.
And you can get your Limerita check and put it towards your Black Mixolins book. How about that? That's right.
It's a rebate. It's a rebate system.
I love that. Oh, my God. I'll help you forge a receipt if you need to pay for extra. All right. Until next week, that's it for the Speakeasy. Check out more programs on Heritage Radio Network, and we'll see you then. Cheers. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Thank you. Cheers. So you don't shun
the devil with your rock. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.